This time we see that these kinds of activities are performed by those who have something more than their own sense gratification in mind. I remember when I was a young boy and it was Christmas time, and there was a family not very far from us, and I can't remember if they had a fire in their house or if there was some kind of, there was some circumstance that was greatly difficult for them. It put them in a very distressful condition at Christmas, and they had nothing. And so my father announced to each of me and my siblings, five of us, that we should each take one of the presents that we got and rewrap it, and we would take them over and give them to this family. So this is a austerity for the sake of others. It's a mundane example, but it shows doing something that you may not particularly want to do that will benefit other people. So I remember sometimes as a Sankirtan devotee, you know, you just didn't want to get out of the vehicle. It's like, you know, those of us that have had this experience, you know, just not getting out of the car. I can't go out in the parking lot today. But we do it. We do it as a service to our spiritual master, and we do it for the benefit of the conditioned souls, because for the ordinary person, excuse me, I mean, we're all very comfortable in this devotional life that we live. But for the ordinary person, access to these principles of devotion, engaging in serving the deity, reading the Bhagavatam, chanting the holy names, taking prasadam, associating with each other, it's just something they don't experience. So to give that opportunity to them is really what Krishna consciousness is all about. I actually remember standing at the bottom of the stairs to the Badrinath temple distributing Prabhupada's books. I didn't know much of the language. Fortunately, there were people there that spoke some English. Interestingly enough, even as early as 1912, 1913, like that, the temple at Badrinath, the local area, there are only about 20 huts, not even permanent buildings per se, but 20 huts where the Saivites lived that took care of things there. This has grown over the years. By 1960, there was 100,000 pilgrims coming regularly to Badrinath. And in these last couple of years, they've had over 800,000 people coming. So they have permanent residence. You know, I think the population there's like 3,500, something like that. And you know, buildings have grown up, and dharmashalas, and internet service, and automobiles, and everything else that kind of removes it from being some remote place in the Himalayas. But these are some of the details that we find about a place that has become increasingly popular. Now, one of the additional draws of that area, not Badrinath itself, is about 3 or 4 miles just outside of the city, and that's the cave, or caves, where Vyasadeva and Ganesh did the recitation and the writing of the Mahabharata. When Srila Vyasadeva wanted to put this down, he wanted a very good author to write it so that he could simply speak it, someone else would do the writing. So he approached Ganesh. Ganesh, of course, is a great scribe. And he proposed to him this idea. And Ganesh considered it and said, okay, I have a condition. Now, this might sound a little peculiar. You're approached by Srila Vyasadeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead incarnate, the literary incarnation of the Lord, and he asks you to do something, and say, okay, but I have a condition. Now, actually, it's not so unheard of. I was listening to a lecture this morning with Srila Prabhupada, and he said, in every situation, there are conditions. He said, materially, just to go from one country to another country, you require a condition, passport, visa, this, that, and the other. Excuse me, I brought a little something back from Vrindavan I didn't want to bring back. And he said, and then even within our material bodies, there are different conditions that we have to meet. So Ganesh presented this condition. Okay, I will write what you speak on one condition, that you speak without stopping. And so Srila Vyasadeva said, all right, but I give you a counter condition. I will speak without stopping, provided you only write what you understand. Not just writing down it, but you have to understand it before you can write it down. So in this way, the process went on. Now, you know, there'd be a situation where there may be a necessity due to saying the sandhya activity, saying his Gayatri, for instance, or other needs to take a break. So Vyas would speak some very complicated, complex verse, and Ganesh would have contemplated for a bit, and then that during that break, Vyasadeva would do whatever was necessary like that. So this was going back and forth. At one point during the writing, Ganesh's pen broke. Now, of course, if you're like my office, you just got a jar of pens right there. You just pick another one up. But this was the only pen he had. So Ganesh broke off one of the tusks he had and began finishing writing with that. So at any rate, these two caves there, and just outside of the cave, jointly between them, so to speak, is a big platform of a rock which looks just like an open book, which is where they would do their work from. So this is all up there also, and this is very famous to go. Sometimes in history, it's very easy to get there as a pilgrim and visit because it's very, very close to the contested Chinese border. Sometimes you couldn't go. Like when we went in 1987, we weren't allowed to go there because of political discrepancies between the two countries. So in this way, we find that some of these places are there. Now, we know that from the Bhagavatam, particularly this verse, but not many other verses, quite frankly, if you do a little Vanipedia research, you'll find that there's only very, very few places where they're mentioned. But these are the four listed places of pilgrimage. Yet, it's interesting to note that the place of Prayag was given great responsibility and respect as the king of all holy places. There's a very nice story about this. And Lord Brahma had arranged for a big gathering, and all the holy places had come. Everyone, all the great sages, they had all come to Prayag. And at that gathering, Lord Brahma declared that Prayag shall be known as Tirtharaj, the king of all the holy places. And Prayag personified the king, quite happy to hear this. Oh, this is good. And so with this, he said, we'll have a great celebration to honor this, and all the holy places shall come and worship and bow down before Prayag personified. Now, just imagine, we set you up here, and we have all the students come and bow down to you. One's head might become a little bit full of themselves. It happens. We've seen such things. So, at any rate, this all went on in the celebration, and Prayag is being, you know, bowed down to, and garlands and this and that. And so Narada Muni was there. Narada Muni, he is known for stirring things up when the necessity. So he saw that Prayag, he's getting a little full of himself. I think I'll step in here. So Narada approached him and he said, wow, that was a really big jugga. He said, you've got the prestigious title now of Tirtharaj. Prayag said, yes. You see how everyone is now bowing down to me. And Narada Muni said, well, not everybody. In case you didn't notice, there were two holy places that did not bow down to you and offer tribute. And Prayag became indignant. He said, what? Who is not honored me? Who didn't come? Who didn't take part? And Narada Muni said, well, Mathura and Vrindavan personified, they didn't come. They didn't offer respects and bow down to you. And Prayag became very upset. Now, Prayag was intelligent. He knew he wanted to resolve this. He said, I'm going to Krishna and complain. Now, this is an interesting point, because if you've got a complaint and you want it resolved, you have to know who to go to. Sometimes you'll see, like I lived in New York for many, many years, and sometimes you'll see a person on the sidewalk that's maybe a little out of touch with reality, and they're just screaming at the wind, yelling their, you know, dislikes and everything, and nobody's listening or paying attention. But Prayag knew, I want this resolved. I'm going to Krishna. So he arrived in Vaikuntha, and he came before the Lord, and he bowed, and he said, my dear Lord, you witnessed my coronation as the king of all holy places. But did you know Mathura and Vrindavan, they did not come to the ceremony to honor me? In this way, they've ignored yours and Lord Brahma's instructions to worship me. This is a big offense. They haven't worshipped me. This is a big offense. You should do something about it, my dear Lord. Well, Lord Krishna looked at Prayag and he said, yes, my dear Prayag, I agree with Lord Brahma that you could be made the king of all holy places. That is true. But you cannot become the king of my own home. Do you think that you can rule over my personal residences of Mathura and Vrindavan? And Prayag was a little surprised. He was actually shocked. He said, your personal residences? And Krishna said, even when I am not there physically, I always reside in Mathura and Vrindavan. They are my own residences, and you cannot rule over them. How do you speak so impudently to desire to have ownership over the places that I reside in? Oh, king of the holy places, you are so foolish. Now, return to your own abode, understanding this point. But before you go, please hear this verse glorifying the place of Mathura Vrindavan. Maturam mandalam shakshan midhe rame paraparam loka trayad param divyam pile pina sami ritam. Mathura mandala, which includes Vrindavan, is my home. It is my transcendental abode above all the three worlds. It is not destroyed even at the time of devastation. Like me, Mathura Vrindavan are eternal. So then, of course, Prayag was humbled, chastised in this way, and he sought the Lord's permission, may I please go to visit Mathura and Vrindavan. Krishna gave his blessings, Tatishtha. So when he arrived, he saw Mathura and Vrindavan from some distance, personalities of them, and he offered full dandavats. He didn't just like, you know, sometimes you see devotees, take them and they're down and like, wow, that you must have said that in shorthand, you know? Or they just kind of, you know, full dandavats he offered. And both of the holy places were very compassionate on him. They forgave him for his offense. And then he said to them, because of my offense, now this is an important point, so please listen. Because of my offense, I still feel some contamination in my heart. This means when we offend someone, not only are we verbally or physically offending them, but some contamination of that activity goes to the heart. So tell me, please, what can I do to become free from this residue of contamination in my heart for not respecting both of you? How can I remove it? Mathura smiled and said, you can become free from the contamination of this offense by going on Braj Mandala or Mathura Mandala Parakram and by visiting all the holy places there. By doing such a parikrama, all inauspiciousness in the heart will go away and prema, our love for Krishna, will awaken. So this alone should be a good impetus for all of us to want to go to Vrindavan during Kartik and do Vrindavan Parikrama, Braj Mandala Parikrama, visit all these holy places. Prabhupananda Saraswati, very, very important acharya in our line, he has said the following. Sri Dham Vrindavan is complete in all aspects, but a fool who finds fault in this place is completely blind. I was just in Vrindavan for a month, and externally to our vision, Vrindavan currently is one huge, massive construction site. Everywhere you look. And the traffic and the congestion reminds me of my taxi driving days in New York City. But if one sees that as Vrindavan, Prabhupada Saraswati says, oh, such a person is blind and a fool. He continues, I pray to Sri Sri Radha and Krishna that I never see the face of such a person as that. May my eyes behold the beauty of Vrindavan. May my intelligence always remain absorbed in the sweet mellows of Vrindavan. May my body be drowned in the pleasing breeze that blows through Vrindavan. I desire to smear the dust of Braj all over my body and offer obeisances to every resident in Vrindavan. Braj Raj, we call it, king of Vrindavan. If your legs desire to leave Vrindavan, then crush them. If your life air desires to take you away from Vrindavan, then give it up. If your body desires to take you from Vrindavan, then tie it up or beat it severely. Very strong words from Prabhupada. But what about all those living beings that are in Vrindavan that aren't in the human form? And there's a lot of different types of living entities there. Gotamiya Tantra says this, he quotes Krishna, this Vrindavan is my own most beloved abode. Everyone who lives in my abode, be they animals, birds, trees, insects, humans, or even demigods, when they die, they all go to my eternal abode. So sometimes we look at the, you know, pigs or the dogs in Vrindavan, and we think, oh, what a horrible birth. Not so bad. Nothing guarantees that our next birth is going to be in the abode of the Lord. But if you're a pig in Vrindavan, your next birth is guaranteed to be in the abode of the Lord. So, now, we understand the importance of Vrindavan Mathura. So we have to ask, which is the most holy place in Vrindavan Mathura? In this tract of land, there's only one place where all the pastimes of the Lord take place at the same time, in the same location, and that is Govardhan. The Rasa dance, the mood of the Rasa dance with the gopis, that takes place only where the Rasa dance is happening. Shamdak, this is a place where only the cowherd boy pastimes happen. Gokula and Nandishwar, the pastimes there are predominantly the parental mood of the Lord. But at Govardhan, and ultimately under Govardhan, all the different rasas get satisfaction there at the same time, at the same place. Krishna's lifting up Govardhan Hill. The cowherd boys are enjoying great fun with him there, while at the same time the gopis are finally looking at Krishna lovingly as long as they want to. The parents of Krishna are very concerned that can this little boy continue to hold this hill? Maybe we should all be helping. The cows are perfectly happy just taking shelter there of him. All of these different rasas are taking place at the same time underneath the shelter of Govardhan Hill. Now, on Govardhan, most important place of the Lord's Leela is described by the Acharyas as Radhakund and Shamakund. This is interesting because Radhakund and Shamakund are inseparable. Not only are they inseparable in Leela, but they're physically inseparable because there's a confluence. There's a pathway that runs between Radhakund and Shamakund, and underneath that, some people don't know this, is a set of archways where the water from Radhakund and Shamakund go back and forth between each other. And actually, if you're so inclined and can do so, you can actually go into Radhakund, swim through those archways, and come up in Shamakund. It's possible to do. So we always just say Radhakund, but it's implied Radhakund, Shamakund. So at any rate, this place that the Acharya says is the most important aspect of devotional service is there on Govardhan Hill. So we can understand that even if we don't get to perform the Char Dham, the pilgrimage to the four holy places listed in this verse, Bhadrikashram, Rameshwar, Jagannath Puri, and Dwarka, Some of us here in this room have had the opportunity to visit all of them. Even if we don't get that, if in this lifetime we just get to go to Mathura Vrindavan, and especially just get to go to Govardhan, then we get the benefit of having visited all these other places. Prayag was made the king of all Tirthas, but he had to submit to Vrindavan Mathura. And the essence of Vrindavan Mathura is Govardhan. So, very, very important point for us to realize here as we look at a verse like this and realize, well, I'm never going to get to go to Badrinath. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. Some people have that opportunity. But we can go to Vrindavan very easily. So, some beautiful prayers to Govardhan. Oh, Govardhan, you are the crest jewel of Vrindavan. You look beautiful as you are lifted by the little finger of Krishna. Oh, Govardhan, my obeisances unto you. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, very, very interesting thing here. Without taking shelter at the feet of this hill, which is the best of Lord Hari's servants, and is full of love for the divine king and queen of Vrindavan, how is it possible to attain pure devotional service? This is a very important statement by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Our goal in everything we do is prema bhakti. That's why we take up the process of devotional service. That's why we execute the principles of devotional service. That's why we do what we do, so that ultimately we get to attain prema bhakti. Yet here, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, if you don't take shelter of Govardhan Hill, that's not going to be possible. Very important point. So while we may not be able to follow in the footsteps of great sages like Uddhava, great devotees, who have such deep connection with Krishna, and go to Badrinath and see Narayan Rishis, we may not see, but we do have the opportunity to go to Vrindavan and take shelter at Govardhan Hill. So this was some thoughts I had on this verse as we look at such a far distant place that seems unreachable, Badrik Ashram in the cold of the year, buried in ice and snow, with the great tapasya of the sages, Narayan Rishis. Yet, we do have such opportunities available to us, and we just simply have to make an endeavor to embrace them and take it up as an active principle of our devotional practice. So, we'll finish there. We've got a few moments if anybody has any classes or comments or corrections or whatever. Mother Ragatmika. Let me adjust my hearing aids just one moment. All right, go.
Did you say that those sadhus who perform those severe austerities, it's benefiting everyone?
All humanity. That's what's said right here in this verse. The welfare of all amiable living entities.
Uh-huh.
All living entities, yep. That's the verse itself. That's not even a purport, which maybe someone outside of our sampradaya might argue, or that, you know, an opinion stated by someone. That's actually straight from the verse. So yeah, very important point. Yeah.
Interesting. Also, I remember the first time I went to Vrindavan and I was there with Devi Shakti.
Mm. Great
said,
saintly personality.
Definitely, she said. That Prabhupada said that everything is there within the four walls of Krishna Balaram Mandir. So, in other words, I can do whatever service Devi Shakti asked me to do, and it's as good as going to all the holy places and visiting. Is that?
Yep.
Okay.
I have one comment and two questions. So
okay.
The first comment is, I remember that Srila Prabhupada, when he was staying in Vrindavan, one time he had somebody that came and he wanted to clean his quarters. So while Prabhupada wasn't there, he took out all the spider webs and cleaned it. And when Prabhupada came back, he was so mad at him. He said, these are residents of Vrindavan. You should not disturb.
Mm.
So I was very surprised because, you know, in the West, Prabhupada was so particular about cleanliness. Yeah, he wouldn't accept the same standard in the West that he did in Vrindavan. So that was a comment. But now I have two questions. The first one is, very often we hear about great soul going to the forest is a symbol of renunciation. So how do we practically in our devotional life understand this statement?
In different strokes for different folks. Not everybody's going to execute devotional service in the same manner. Not everyone has the necessity for engaging in the same manner. Some people are much more inclined towards a life of renunciation. They're not involved in family life and community living and all like we are here. And, you know, so they have different opportunities available to them. This is the necessity of understanding the different ashrams. You know, Grihastha has a different responsibility and a lifestyle than a sannyasi. A brahmachari has a different lifestyle and activity. Vaishya is not going to behave in the same way as a brahmana. So, yeah, those opportunities are there, and if they're suitable for one's particular circumstance, they should be embraced. But they're not suitable for everyone.
Okay, that's on the physical side, but I meant like more the devotional side inside, because I think that a Grihastha can walk to the forest. In the sense that he, although everything around him seems to be family life, inside of him he can walk to the forest in the sense that he can be completely devoted to Lord Krishna. Can we take it that sense, or that is speculation?
Well, that's all part of the same understanding, at least to my realization.
Yeah. Okay, second question. If we have an inclination more towards Mayapur than Vrindavan just because of some kind of more connection with Lord Chaitanya, not that we don't like the pastimes that goes on in Vrindavan and all that, can we consider that it is as good as going to Vrindavan, or that's an offense?
That going where is as good?
Going to Mayapur in our
heart. Bhaktisiddhanta made that very clear. No difference between the dhams. So many places in the Shastra it's indicated that there's no difference between the dhams. Yet, devotees have their personal likes and dislikes, their personal inclinations. So
there is no offense thinking
here,
that
there's no offense, and here again, devotional service is not a cookie-cutter process. Yeah. Sri Devi has a question next. Oh, and then, well, Manamati, you're right there. However, you guys want to sort it out. The ladies have the building today. Yes, Sri Devi.
Thank you for your ecstatic class. Wow, that was so fascinating that even when they locked up the Badrik Ashram temple and in the winter, and they came back and they saw that the paraphernalia was used.
That's the local history, yeah.
And it still is happening, like today?
I've never observed it. This is all I've heard, though. But there are different types of accepted history, that which is from Shastra, and then that which is local tradition. It's also accepted as valid. So, yeah, that's the local tradition, yeah.
Thank you. And those four tirthas that were mentioned in the shloka, so those four, are they like the oldest?
Age isn't given on any of them. I'm sure there are some places that are older, but the specific, that's what I was saying in the search I did through Vanipedia, there was not much information about why these four. So I can't really expand on that personally. Yeah. Madhavati.
Thank you for the class, Chaturatma Guru. My question is in regards to what Rogatmika was saying, people performing austerities and this benefit for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, how does that work in the sense that, you know, if we are performing, let's say, devotional service, even like here, which is also a holy place, does that benefit others when we are performing our seva or our, some austerities in devotion.
It's mentioned that when one worships a Shalagram Shila, Govardhan Shila, 10 miles in circumference, a 10 mile diameter, benefit from that seva. Oh. So certainly the unmeasurable, unlimited activities, the devotional practices that go on here at New Ramanreti are benefiting the greater Alachua, Gainesville, you know, area. You know, there's so much devotional practices that are done in this area. You know, what was it? Someone said to me once that it was almost as if there was some type of chakra of spiritual energy, you know, somewhere in this area that all these devotional practices, I mean, why here, you know? So, yeah, I would have to say, based on the conclusions and instructions of Shastra, that's 100% correct. That whatever little devotional service we think we're doing, there is an ultimate benefit beyond us. This is the same principle as being able to receive Narayan Rishi. Who go to Badrinath? I mean, I went to Badrinath, I never saw Narayan Rishi. They're there, I didn't see them. So that's only due to the impurities on my side, not due to the fact that they're not present. So in the same way, seeing the long extended benefits of devotional practices being executed in a place and not seeing them are only our own shortcomings. Shastra is very clear that, you know, any type of devotional service performed anywhere benefits everyone. So yeah, whatever we're doing here, gathering each morning during our Mangal Arti, our Japa, our Guru Puja, our Bhagavatam class, our daily RTs, our fabulous worship of Shri Shri Radhasham Sundar, distributing prasadam, distributing books, having kirtan, this 6-hour kirtan program coming up once a month. All of these things are great benefits to the community at large.
So it's something like, I guess, mystical or something? Or
yeah, spiritual. Mystically spiritual. Or spiritually mystical. Spiritual first and mystical second.
So it's hard to know what kind of, you know, like when we're chanting, we think, okay, the sound vibration.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I'm thinking, well, in what way do they benefit? 10 miles circumference, okay, so who benefits what, or what do they benefit? Or, you know, I guess, I don't know if you know the answer, but I guess in my
Well, mind. Here again, the inability to understand this lies on our own shortcomings, not on the fact that it's not accurate, mm-hmm. You know, which is, I mean, in reality, the pinnacle of our efforts in devotional service. Whatever shortcomings there are, you know, whatever distress, whatever anxiety, whatever fall downs, whatever any of that we have, it's our own shortcomings, not shortcomings in the process, which is a very important point, you know. I mean, in the academic effort of studying calculus, the inability to comprehend it doesn't mean that the calculus isn't correct. It means I just don't get it. You know, that's why I flunked geometry. Well, I didn't exactly flunk, but I got the second lowest grade. But it wasn't due to the fact that there was some defect there, just my inabilities.
Yeah,
we can apply the same to our devotional service, yeah, yeah. Anything for the guy side? We've got the...
Vrgatmukha's
got it. You're not going to get it away from
just
it.
Just to continue on my question, actually.
Yes, yes.
That's why I asked it, because I can understand how performing devotional service may benefit others around or like that. But these sadhus, are they particularly even thinking of Krishna? Is it devotional service or is it just austerities? I mean...
Well, there's both. I mean, there are Mayavadi sadhus up there that are just, I mean, when we were going up to Badrinath, we stopped to take a break at one confluence. It wasn't Dev Prayag, it was just a little bit beyond there. And there was this group of sadhus, and they were definitely hardened tapaspis, long matted hairs, and clearly hadn't bathed in a bit, and, you know, clothes that weren't like, you know, my newest kurta or whatever, you know, like that. And they were, you know, sitting just right on the side of the road, but they were all smoking a good chillum. And they were really enjoying their austerity, but, you know, wasn't for Krishna. So, yeah, there's tapasvis up there in the Himalayas that just do all kinds of tapasva, but, you know, for what purpose?
Oh, okay.
You know, so it's not that everybody in Badrinath is just a pure devotee thinking of the benefit of the humanity.
Okay, I just have another question, please. When talking
one of those rare days I don't have to rush off to work, so sure, go ahead.
Thank you. Speaking of all the animals in Vrindavan, we understand, even though it's a simple process, it's not necessarily easy to attain Krishna prema, which gives us the entrance to Goloka Vrindavan, ultimately, in our next life, even, you know. How do these animals, do they have Krishna prema? Is that it? They already
have it?
They don't
have, but they'll get.
They're going to get it by this last bit of tapasya.
Prabhupada said that in several lectures, and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur confirms it right here as well. This is their last birth. They may be just this nasty dog that I saw every morning with so many horrible skin diseases, you wouldn't want to go near it at all. They may be that monkey that's only got one ear and half a mouth due to fighting, and they may be that pig just lying in the gutter enjoying all of that, but their next birth is going to be in the spiritual world. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur confirms it with that verse. Prabhupada said it many times in his lectures. We can't understand it. I see that face you're making. We can't understand it, but it's a reality of the Dham. This is why people go to the Dham and just don't leave. And Prabhupada Saraswati speaks very hard words. If your legs think to leave the Dham, crush them.
Yeah.
If your body wants to leave the Dham, beat it. So he speaks these very hard things because the benefits of staying in the Dham. And therefore, these Dhamvasis, these devotees, these residents, these Vaishnavas that live there, they're worshipable. You should take the dust of their feet on their head. Yeah. Anybody on this side? Oh my God, we got some somebody's here. Okay, Prabhuji? Yeah.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you so much for a wonderful class. My question is regarding Vrindavan. So you, as Rupa Goswami says in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, out of five things, one is we should stay in the Dham. And then also later on he says, in mind we should stay in Vrindavan, because practically we cannot live there, or maybe sometimes we cannot even go there in a year. So what does that mean, like in the mind? Because we are so busy, we have so many things going on. Is it just while chanting? Is it practically, like, what can we do to have Vrindavan?
It means trick your mind. That's what it means. Trick your mind, whatever way you can. Any way you can do it. I'll give you an example. Where I work, I have to log onto the computer 20, 30, 40 times a day, because after you finish, it logs right off. So you got to log back in with your password. Your password has to change every 3 months. And when you change your password, you can't use a password you used in the last 5 times. Wow, this is too complicated. So I figured out a method. I start my residence at Radhakund. Radhakund becomes my password. Some configuration of Govardhan and Radhakund becomes my password. After 3 months, I move to Shyamakund. After 3 months, I move to Shyamkutira. From Shyamkutira, I go to Manasikanda, like that. So, tricking yourself, remember Krishna. Whatever it takes, however you can do it. Not only when we're chanting, all the time. You know, we hear these Christmas songs right now. You know, you go into any store and they're playing all these Christmas songs. You know, it's pretty easy to Krishnaize them. You know, or to see the material. What's that one, anyway, I'm not going to pollute your mind with it, but at any rate, you know, it's pretty easy to take these songs and kind of turn them around. Because, you know, you're hearing them. You can't block your ears. You're in the store, you're hearing it. And you've got to get your grocery shopping done, and it's going to go on for a while. So you just Krishnaize it, you know? Trick your mind. That's how we stay Krishna conscious. That's how we remember Vrindavan. That's what we have to do. You know, it's a struggle. We don't always do it, but that's the process, yeah. All right, Stita Namuni, lay it on me.
Well, that's pretty cool. You could do that with Christmas songs, you know. But can you do that with Led Zeppelin?
I can, and I'm not going to give you any examples right here and now, but yes, it's pretty easy.
We could have a few bars after class. But about these animals, you know? I mean, you know, it's not like they're, like, the animal species. It's a pig, you know? It's some jiva on this long journey with Krishna.
Mm.
And they've just, like, done a lot, and now they're burning off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you're just starting off as a pig and where's your Joppa bag, you know? That's your problem. So I just want to give a little warning here because, you know, I got my disciples here over in the porch, right? and you don't want to do all this devotional service and make a couple of little offenses there. And they have to come back as a squirrel to burn it off, you know?
Well, Prabhupada does say that, like the monkeys, for instance, he says there's, you know, residents that have... you know, engaged in less than devotional activities. Okay, you take your next breath as a monkey. Okay,
yeah,
you take your next breath as a pig.
Yeah.
So, but you're burning that off.
Yeah. I mean, so Krishna will take care of you, but you want to keep focused.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to finish out.
So just adding one point to this.
Yeah, please.
I was thinking the same thing which Prabhuji mentioned when I was hearing Matsuji. And the example is Bharat Maharaj, when he was in a deer, nobody actually knew how advanced he was in the last life.
Mm-hmm.
So he may have had, you know, tough situation when he was a deer, and those who were looking at him may have just thought he's an ordinary deer.
Very, very good point. And what did that deer get? That deer got the opportunity to associate with the Bhaktivedantas. So by associating with the devotees, there's a dog in Ramamriti Bhagatya, which is a lane that I frequent there. Govinda Maharaj lives there, and Balaram Baba lives there, and others. And there's a dog that stays in that lane. And everyone there is very friendly to him. And he's a street dog. They give him a little prasad on him occasionally. He gets a little rub on the head. So whatever past birth, who knows? But somehow, that particular section of Vrindavan, where there's kirtan going on 24 hours a day, this dog has decided to reside there. Okay, so this dog is getting unbelievable. He's getting more benefit than me. And yet, he's in a dog's body. So what did he do in his last birth? Who knows? What did that deer do in his life? Nobody knew it was Bharat Maharaj. Very good point, yeah. Prabhu, last one, then we're going to wrap this up. Yes.
So based on Chardham, or the four holy places, Lord Vishnu dines at Puri. He bathes at Rameshwaram. Gets dressed and anointed at Dwarka. And meditates at Badrinath.
Oh, very nice. Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jai.